The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. In this episode, we'll dig a little deeper into the theme of the November issue of Our State Magazine, which was Beauty in the Grain, featuring articles all about the warmth of wood. Our first article is entitled, The Forgotten Frescoes, How One Man's Ambition to See a Famous Artist's Works led to little-known pieces to a holy place of prominence in the High Country. When a South Carolina hospice building was sold, the new owner of Psalm 23 and the Good Shepherd didn't know the value of the frescoes and considered painting over them, an act that would constitute blasphemy in North Carolina. James, called Jim, Walters Jr. never fancied himself an art connoisseur. He's not a Philistine by any means, but he's also not, by his own admission, the guy you would expect to embark on a sacred art pilgrimage, passionately pursuing paintings that harken back to the days of the Italian Renaissance. And, in fact, he wasn't that guy. Not at first, anyway. A few years ago, Walters, a retired Charlotte banker, was looking for a fresh start. Dolly, his beloved wife of 45 years, had died in 2019 after a lengthy battle with Alzheimer's disease. After devoting himself faithfully to her care for 5 years, Walter longed to begin a new life. He reinstated his membership at a Charlotte country club and bought a home in Blowing Rock. It wasn't long, though, before the COVID-19 pandemic shut down the country club. To make matters worse, Walters was diagnosed with a rare form of leukemia and was told he only had 3 to 5 years to live. At 75, he was too old for a bone marrow transplant, his doctor told him. I'm just going to go to Blowing Rock and make a bucket list, Walters recalls deciding. And one of the first things on my list was to drive the entire 469 miles of the Blue Ridge Parkway. Walters and his new significant other, Peggy Denny, set out in July 2021. They had only one planned stop, a visit to Holy Trinity Church in Glendale Springs, home of the Last Supper, one of North Carolina fresco artist Benjamin F. Long's, the IV's, earliest and most beloved pieces. That was the only planned stop, but it wasn't the last. Honestly, I didn't even know what a fresco was at that point, Walter said. But then, when I saw The Last Supper, I just loved it. I couldn't take my eyes off of it. Walters remembers how the colors drew him into the painting in a way no other art ever had. That's a signature trait of frescoes, in which pigments mixed with water are applied directly onto and slowly seep into a layer of wet lime plaster, giving the mural a vibrant, almost luminous quality. As Walters and Denny were leaving, they saw a flyer explaining that another spot, only 10 miles down the road, St. Mary's Church in West Jefferson, housed 3 more of Long's frescoes, Mary Great with Child, Mystery of Faith, and John the Baptist. They excitedly drove to West Jefferson, where Walters again was mesmerized. At St. Mary's, another flyer told of nearly a dozen more fresco locations in North Carolina, Charlotte, Statesville, Morganton, and Montreat, among others, and Walters mentally revised his bucket list. 3 days later, after completing his trek on the parkway, he began immersing himself in the study of fresco painting, reading whatever he could find about Long's career and visiting the other North Carolina frescoes. By that December, Walters had visited every U.S. fresco listed on Long's website except one, Psalm 23, a painting in the chapel at Hospice of Charleston, located in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. Walters and Denny eagerly agreed to go to see the final fresco, but there was just one problem. We searched and searched and searched, but we couldn't find a listing for Hospice of Charleston, Walters recalls. It no longer existed. And if the hospice facility no longer existed, what had become of the Psalm 23 fresco? Walters solved the mystery by searching through official state documents and real estate transactions. Having closed years earlier for financial reasons, the building had a new owner at the new tenant, Roper Hospice Cottage. When Walters and Denny visited the site, they were in for a couple of surprises. First, there were actually two frescoes, Psalm 23 and The Good Shepherd. And second, nobody seemed to know much about the paintings. The larger of the two, Psalm 23, is approximately 15 feet long and 7 feet high. It doesn't incorporate the rich pastoral imagery traditionally associated with Psalm 23. Lush green pastures, still waters, a tranquil sky, a flock of sheep, a vigilant shepherd. But it does exude an undeniable sense of peace, comfort, and strength. Certain scenes jump out at you. A small chorus of women, their faces peaceful and relaxed. A large rock, likely representing God, immense, firm, sturdy, immovable. And a man leaning into the rock with his palm against it. An unclothed man with his back to the viewer and his arms extended, palms up, perhaps symbolic of someone anticipating the Lord's provision. The smaller fresco, The Good Shepherd, measures about 8 feet long by 5.5 feet high. That painting depicts a shepherd, his staff in one hand and a dandelion in the other, with his flock in the fields behind him. The dandelion and its scattering seeds seem to represent the Holy Spirit. Ben Long won't tell you what it means, Walters said. Artists are like that sometimes. They like to leave it up to your own interpretation. After seeing the two little-known frescoes, Walters learned more about them. In 2006, Long had been privately commissioned to create a fresco based on Psalm 23, one of the most beloved and comforting verses of all Scripture, to be installed at Hospice of Charleston. The woman who commissioned the work, Mabel Stowe Query, envisioned a painting that would bring peace and comfort to dying patients and their loved ones. Long, of course, needed little introduction to North Carolina, where his frescoes in Glendale, Springs, and West Jefferson, in particular, have been much visited destinations for decades. In South Carolina, though, his work is lesser known, so his Hospice of Charleston project largely flew under the radar. Query died in 2007, well before Long had completed the frescoes, but he continued painting the works, finishing in 2009. Ironically, the two frescoes, created by one of the foremost fresco painters in the world, debuted in the chapel with little fanfare. For years, they languished in low country obscurity, all but forgotten. Learning this, Walters became a man on a mission. Save the forgotten frescoes and find a way to bring them to North Carolina where a wider audience could enjoy them. He contacted the owner of the building and asked if they might be willing to sell the frescoes. To his delight, the answer was yes. Now Walters just needed a buyer. Meanwhile, about 300 miles north of Mount Pleasant, an improbable tale of serendipity, or was it divine intervention, was unfolding. In Blowing Rock, Rumpel Memorial Presbyterian Church was embarking on a major capital campaign to renovate its education center and add a new fellowship building. The Main Street Church had outgrown its existing space and needed both updates and room to grow. Some drawings for the ambitious expansion had already been rendered by October 2020. One, when church member Bill Wilson suggested an addition to the plans. I had this dream that I remembered clearly when I woke up, Wilson recalls. I dreamed about Ben Long frescoes and about him coming to Blowing Rock to paint one. The Capitol Committee was curious. A Ben Long fresco? Here? Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful? Then came the harder questions. Where would we put such a large piece of art? How would we pay for it? Is Ben Long even painting frescoes anymore? Ultimately, the committee agreed, with a measure of disappointment, that the campaign was already too far along and another huge expensive element would be too difficult to add. The dream was put to bed, said Kathy Beach, the church's senior pastor, but the Holy Spirit was still at work. In January 2022, only 3 months after Wilson's mysterious dream, Beach received a cold call from a man whose name she didn't recognize, Jim Walters. Beach didn't realize it at the time, but that phone call was about to alter the future of Rumpel Memorial Presbyterian. Walters was ringing with a most unusual proposal. He needed a church to house a couple of Ben Long frescoes. Those last three words, Ben Long frescoes, caught Beach's attention. If Bill Wilson hadn't had that dream, I would have said no, there's no way, she says. But since we already had that other seed planted, I really felt like it was providential. How did Jim know to call us? And how did he know we would be receptive to the idea because of Bill's dream? Granted, the idea of a fresco had already been nixed, but this was different. This time, there were two frescoes, and they'd already been completed. They just needed a place to call home. This is so ironic, she told Walters with a chuckle. I can't say no, because this may be divine intervention, and we Presbyterians believe in that kind of stuff. Beach invited Walters to pitch the idea to a few church members. Sure enough, they were equally intrigued. The temptation of owning two Ben Long frescoes was too great to ignore, and the group decided to present the idea to the church's leadership body. The leaders gave the green light, generous donors stepped up, and the church purchased the frescoes for $200,000, roughly half of Long's original commission. Unveiled during a dedication ceremony in February, the two frescoes, largely unseen for more than two dozen years, are now on public display at the church. And how fitting for their new home to be in Blowing Rock, a town where Long resided for a good bit of his childhood and where he got married. Blowing Rock is a place I spent a lot of my life, says Long, who now lives in Asheville and attended the unveiling. The fact that I love this place makes it really special for me that the frescoes are now here in Blowing Rock. Like many others, though, Long can't help but marvel at how the two frescoes, which he had thought might never be again seen publicly, found their way to a small church in the mountains he so enjoys. Here, leaders have already incorporated the paintings into the church's fresco ministry, placing them where folks gather before weddings, funerals, and other sacred events. Beach believes the frescoes have broader appeal, too. People might come here because they're on vacation and they've heard about these beautiful paintings, so this is an opportunity for us to connect with, we hope, thousands of people a year who will come in this space and encounter God, she says. That would certainly explain why the fresco project seems suffused with divine intervention, wouldn't it? For Walters, who's now 80, the project helped him take his mind off his leukemia. Chemotherapy and platelet booster injections have stabilized his health for now, but it's the frescoes and their miraculous journey back to North Carolina that have restored his soul. This way, the way this all came together, I don't have any other way to explain it, he says. Miracles aren't necessarily turning water into wine. And our next article is entitled In the Groove. A Raleigh company breathes new life into old wood as it prepares the next generation of artisans for a career in restoration. Bernard Mumford has long specialized in restoring damaged goods to their original glory, but lately he's undergone a bit of a retooling himself. Call it a reinvigoration of the spirit that came nearly at the price of his life. At the moment, though, he's focused on all the tarnished treasures awaiting attention at the 16,500-square-foot warehouse in northwest Raleigh that's home to Mumford Restoration. Many of the pieces elicit a deep reverence in the irrepressible Mumford, 63. Others, not so much. Why, he hoots at a battered mid-century stereo cabinet. The owners could go to a flea market, he said. and find another one like this in working condition for $75. Instead, they're willing to pay many multiples of that to Mumford and his team of craftspeople to resuscitate this particular piece. Why did they do it? He asks again. It's the sentimental value, because of what it means to them. But look at this. He approaches a late 19th century Bechstein upright piano, which is, well, no longer upright. Mumford's team has carefully disassembled it, spreading it across three work tables. This is awesome, he says, rolling his nimble fingers across the rosewood grain. The piano, every strewn part, belongs to a native of England now living in North Carolina, and she'll be in soon for a close-up assessment. If all goes well, the meeting will move Mumford one step closer to the smiles, hugs, joy that bubble forth when customers lay eyes on a prized possession returned to the splendor they remember. I'm obsessed with fixing things, he says with a laugh that bounces out of him like a rubber ball, hitting a couple of high notes before driveling off. But an accident in 2023 now has Mumford obsessing about another matter beyond the detail work. A dust-up of existential proportions. While craftsmanship per se doesn't run in Mumford's family, a sweat-on-the-brow kind of devotion does. He grew up the son of a celebrated theologian, Bernard C. Bob Mumford, 94, who traveled the world counseling believers. The young Mumford accompanied his parents on many of these trips, admiring their dedication and stamina. But scholarship wasn't his calling. He dropped out of the University of Alabama after all of 3 days. He loved working with his hands, recalled his mother, Judith, age 88, and he was always adventurous. In 1985, with a loan from his parents, Mumford bought a small piano restoration business in California and learned the angles of both craft and operations from the original owner. In 1996, he relocated Mumford Restoration to Raleigh and had a minister's knack for earning people's trust. I once watched him correct some work for a customer who was unhappy, his father said. He'd been over backwards for him. He makes customers part of the process. By 2023, the company had become a regional institution. While still welcoming rusty rocking horses, saggy steamer trunks, and moldy family Bibles, Mumford had expanded to larger projects, including removing, restoring, and reinstalling the sleek wood furnishings from a 1901 Pullman train car. The going was smooth for the master craftsman until one June evening. Cruising home from work on his BMW motorcycle, Mumford took a familiar curve at around 40 miles an hour, but instead of finding open road, he slammed into a pair of deer. Over the handlebars, he soared, somersaulting across the asphalt into a drainage ditch. Hours later, when he came to in the hospital, he turned his appraiser's eye on his own life. First, he says, I was grateful for morphine. It made dealing with his 8 broken ribs, busted right shoulder, 2 snapped fingers, and swaths of torn skin bearable. But as he mended over 12 excruciating months, a bigger challenge loomed. Motorcycle smash-ups or not, Mumford and the artisans he employed were getting older. Who would take over the craft? Who would take special care reanimating faded memories? I saw it, he said, as a renewal of my purpose. Water buffalo horn is not as plentiful in North Carolina as, say, squirrel tail. It might even qualify as exotic. But the Mumford team needed it to repair a chainmail armored vest dating back to 17th century Spanish conquistadors. The task of replacing the vest's cracked plates fell to Sarah Reese, age 44. She's one of the numerous artisans who came up through the Sentimental Restoration Guild, the apprentice program Mumford created in 2021 and threw himself into with renewed vigor following his accident. I'm now fulfilled watching the apprentices finding their way, he says. To source above water buffalo horn, Reese tracked down a supplier who sells it for use in making knife handles. She reveals the replacement plates, now seamlessly fitted into the old conquistador vest. Then, with her t-shirt sleeves rolled up over her shoulders, she turns to an oval paint palette she's using to touch up a road-weary toy truck that's been rolling since the 60s. I come from a rural fix-it family where we didn't always have money to buy new things, says Reese, who grew up north of Kinston. It just scratches an itch in my brain to complete something that needs fixing. Others have pawed at that same itch. At a work table just past a stopped Bavarian wall clock adorned with wild boar tusks, apprentice Luke Kaiser has been bucking up the backrest on a creaky, stickly chair. He's 19, and one day he'd love to open his own shop. If he does, his older brother Ian, a 22-year-old apprentice piano technician at Mumford, might join him. This is exactly what needs to happen, Ian says, glancing around the hectic warehouse, fans struggling to churn the soupy summer haze, a hub for all these technicians and craftsmen. As a junior partner and general manager, Zach Mumford, Bernard's 35-year-old son, regularly checks in on apprentices and seasoned craftsmen alike as they labor over everything from squat Depression-era radios to effortlessly chic chandeliers. We're one of the few businesses where someone brings in a project and no one person knows how to fix it, he says, but together we can figure it out. Now a full crew gathers around the Beckstein piano for a pivotal check-in. Time to meet the owner. Smiling through his trimmed gray beard, Mumford leads Elizabeth Shearer, 72, to her Beckstein. Like he does with all his customers, Mumford greets Shearer with the bonhomme of a teacher welcoming parents to a school pageant starring their children. Shearer's merry hazel eyes dance across the piano's disassembled parts and the glow of its refinished wood. She's quick with a smile and a question, which usually leads to a quip and then to another question. But now she's quiet. She's not just appraising. She's traveling somewhere else, somewhere in her memories. The Beckstein belonged to her grandmother, Flora, who died before Shearer ever knew her. Shearer and her brothers learned to play on it while growing up outside London. Family lore depicted Flora as an orphan from Germany who came to England and studied piano at the Royal College of Music, where she met her cellist husband. Shearer connected with her through family stories, a few black-and-white photos, and her Beckstein, which Shearer hopes to hand down to her grown son eventually. Shearer gazes into the piano's rosewood frontboard, now finished to bring out the distinct textures of the wood in the floral paneled inlay. Ash, elm, and maple. Oh, she says at last, bringing a hand to her cheek. I love this. Ian Kaiser watches from a few feet away. His hard work, he knows, has paid off. To be part of helping someone fall in love with their piano all over again, he says, is very rewarding. With the finishing approved, Kaiser's work on the melody-making innards of the Beckstein will commence. Eventually, the instrument will look and sound as it did in its heyday, not brand new, but revived. Shearer leans into Mumford. I wish, she whispers, I could have myself restored this way. Mumford releases his bouncing ball of a laugh. We don't offer that, he says. Not yet. Our next article is entitled Smoke in Sea Air, a Down East native turns local fish and a hurricane-damaged pecan tree into a tribute to the coast he calls home. Craig Hamilton's journey back to his roots started in 2018 with a hurricane, a disfigured pecan tree, and a passel of fish. Mother Nature always wins all arguments with me, Hamilton says. When she supplied the pecan tree, it was a sign, and there was never any more discussion after that. At one point, a Category 4 hurricane, Florence, walloped eastern North Carolina from New Bern to Wilmington, leaving people down east without electricity for a couple of weeks. Hamilton rode it out in Beaufort with his mother. Once the roads were clear, he went out to the small community of Atlantic to check on things. The two pecan trees across from his grandfather's home place had survived the storm, but one stood ragged and broken, its thick limbs torn and twisted by the wind. The beauty of the tree was gone, he said. He took it down, cut the wood into logs, and stacked them in a little shed beside the home. A proud Down Easter, Hamilton grew up in Beaufort, spending a weekend a month in Atlantic, one in a string of coastal fishing communities. He left at 17 with big ambitions and spent decades traveling the globe in a career that mixed science, software, and pharmaceuticals before finding his way back. Around 2014, nearing 60, he started spending more time in the Down East area. His mother was still living then, so he bought a small house in Beaufort. He purchased a boat and entertained the idea of leading fishing charters. He began spending weekends in Atlantic, where his grandfather's childhood home had stood across from Core Sound. The original house has burned down, but it had been rebuilt, and behind it stretched 13 wooded acres. Across the road, those two once graceful pecan trees remained. With plenty of wood on hand, Hamilton decided to try his hand at smoking. He experimented with whatever was running, red or black drum, sheep's head, pompano, Spanish mackerel, adjusted brines, and shared the results with his family and friends. It was a hit. "Once I did pecan," he said, "everybody said, 'Oh, this is a significant improvement over every other wood.'" Hamilton had planned to just smoke fish for fun, but after sharing samples at the North Carolina Seafood Festival in Morehead City for Carteret Catch, people begged him to sell it. That's when the idea came to him. He had the wood, the know-how, and a steady source of fish. Maybe he could create a small value-added business, one that supported local fishermen and provided a few jobs in his hometown of Atlantic. "It's all about the jobs," he says. "If you don't have jobs, you're going to leave." The pandemic stalled his plans for building a smokehouse in Atlantic, but Hamilton pressed on, converting a used food truck into his smoking headquarters. He also learned a lot about the wood he was using. Pecan, it turns out, dries hard. It regularly bends the blades on his saw. Now he cuts it up with a circular saw, a bandsaw, and a hatchet or an axe. On most weekends these days, Hamilton, ball cap low over his wispy white hair, can be found with his associate, Charity Flowers, peddling smoked fish fillets and spreads under the name Ophelia Inlet Products at the old Beaufort Farmers Market. The winding path that brought him home was long, but it's seasoned with salt air, sweet pecan smoke, and a deep love for the place that raised him. Every week he visits a couple of fish houses in the community of Cedar Island to buy fresh fish. He scales and fillets the fish, Flowers debones them, then they brine the fish in brown sugar, salt, molasses, and water trucked in from Beaufort and smoke it low and slow at about 175 degrees. "I'm smoking for taste," he says. 100 years ago, you had to smoke it dry enough to keep it on the Oregon Trail. Ophelia Products' smoked fish was never meant to be big enough to save Atlantic, but it has earned a loyal following in the Beaufort area. Hamilton sells about $500 worth on Saturdays, and new customers find him every week. At 70, he doesn't know how long he'll keep going, but he's got the wood to do it. "I've got enough pecan to last me past the time I'm dead," he says, laughing. "And if he runs out, well, there's still that second tree." For more information or to order, visit OpheliaInletProducts.com. That sound means we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine, but I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired, and broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. For comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. And so long until next time.